Walk good and stay tuned for Back of the Book. 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock.
Got to build our love.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top of the line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to all freaking fag revolutionary radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about a number of topics on this radio program. You can find out a little bit more about what we're going to do by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame in the left-hand side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. And you go on to that, and you will see what we plan to do this morning. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 97th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we can't reference those things on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story of the week. We are again holding at 118 followers on Twitter, and the whole world is holding its breath watching this. The next thrill-packed episode of the WBAI Local Station Board will be held on Wednesday, July 13th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And I want to say a word or two about this program. As recently as Friday morning, we knew just what topics we were going to talk about on this program. And then the Supreme Court bombshell came later yesterday morning. So we're cramming any number of topics into this program. This is also our annual Christopher Street Liberation Day program, but we're going to have to talk about all of the things that have been breaking this past week. So this is going to be a somewhat crowded program. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 542,630,511 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,327,045. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 86,869,150, and the death toll in America was 1,015,612. So 2,720 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. This week's death toll is higher than last week's, although it's higher by a bit less than 1,000. Still, that's a lot of people dying in 1 week. The pandemic is not over, even though a lot of people are behaving as if it were. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. And we have to say that this was all mostly preventable. The summer solstice occurred this past Tuesday morning, June 21st. This is our first program of the summer of 2022. Of course, one of the things that happens is this overnight radio program we're doing starts getting assaulted by dawn before we're like a third of the way through the program or something. We also watched TV and they talked about, oh, the solstice is coming. And we got treated to one TV anchor saying that the summer solstice is when the earth is closest to the sun. These people have no problem spreading misinformation and ignorance. What idiots. They're paid quite a handsome sum, and they just say these stupid things. The earth being close to the sun, it happens every year. It's called perihelion. It happens in January. The opposite of that is aphelion, where the earth is farthest from the sun, and that occurs in early July. And this is more of a program note. We had planned for last week's program to talk about a story regarding a Mr. Marcus Bryant, who was killed by a Q train a little over a week ago. And we were going to go on the air, and we were prepared to talk about what was being said about this, because it didn't make sense what happened to this guy. The original story was that he had gotten his pants leg caught in the closed door of a Q train, and then the Q train had sped off down the platform at Avenue M and had thrown him onto the express tracks where it killed him, and a train on the express track slowed down and did not hit him. And we were going to comment on the extreme improbability of that happening, because the Avenue M stop on the Q train. We know that. We've had to go there. We had a dentist that we had to go back and forth on the Q train at Avenue M for. And so we're familiar with that. And I was familiar with it from years ago, but they've redone all of the stations, and they're all pretty much the same on the Q line now. Well, we know that if you get caught in the door or something, and you have that scenario, what it will do is throw you into a wall, a metal wall, a thin metal wall, which is where the platform ends. And that's it. In fact, I'm going to put a little shot up on my website of what it looks like. And so how on earth would you be flung to tracks that are on the opposite side of the train? And we had these questions and we wondered about what's going on here. Well, the story changed, and then it changed, and then it changed yet again. And they've gone through various different things. The latest I've heard, again, the New York Police Department and the Metropolitan Transportation Agency have two different stories, and they keep having different stories, and they keep changing their stories. And so the current story, the last we heard, was no, he didn't get thrown onto the other track. That now, instead of getting his pants leg caught in the door, that he stepped out and his leg went between the train and the platform, which can happen on some of these stations. They've got quite a gap on them. And that the train then moved out and it was kind of gruesome. It basically tore off his arm and his leg, and then he fell on the tracks right there after the train left the station. And then we are hearing that the next train came in 3 minutes later and hit him. And this killed him. So this still asks a few questions here. There was a passenger on the platform who tried to call 911 but couldn't get any cell coverage. And then he went down to the token booth clerk. No more tokens, the clerk, and told him about it, but apparently nothing could happen before the other train came in. And so we still have this question of how did that happen? The conductor is supposed to be looking out the window for exactly this kind of accident. So did the conductor just not bother? And so these are big questions here. And also, coming into Avenue M, the Manhattan bound, it's a straight track. There's no curve there. So wouldn't the motorman have seen a guy on the tracks? I don't know. So there are still these questions, and we didn't want to go into talking about this last time when the stories were changing all over the place. So this is what we know now. And, this is tragic. And Mr. Bryant's family, I'm sure, is mourning his loss. Somebody needs to figure out what the hell happened here, because it could happen to any one of us. Pickles of the North and I have been watching the January 6th committee hearings on TV this past week. We had two hearings this week, and oh boy, the revelations that are coming out of these things. It's just amazing. And really, they've made this extremely strong case that Donald Trump and a bunch of people around Donald Trump were violating the law and trying to stage a coup, an actual coup in the United States of America to make him, I guess, the permanent president or something. Would he be a president? More like he'd be the, I guess, King of America. Maybe that would have been the title he would have chosen for himself if he'd been able to hang in there. But this is something, this is just amazing. This has not happened in America before. It happens in other countries. Hasn't happened in America before.
I think of him as America's slumlord. That's what he would have been.
Yeah, well, basically that would be it. And so we've seen all this evidence of wrongdoing, of conspiracy. Really, I think, I'm not a lawyer, but I think they're getting awfully close to where they could actually charge Trump with treason. Now, treason is an extremely difficult charge to make in America. And the historic reason behind that is because in England, where the people who started up the United States of America had come from, in England, they used treason charges all over the place. If you boinked the queen, the king could call you up on treason and, you know, have you killed. Or if you were the queen and King Henry VIII accused you of boinking somebody else, treason. Yeah, it's an amazing idea. And there were other things that you could do that would be treason that you would say, well, no, that's not really treason, but they said it was treason. So that's why the American, the so-called founding fathers, started up having treason be a very nearly impossible thing to prosecute for. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think the January 6th committee is getting to the point where they might be able to really make a good case for treason charges against Donald Trump and maybe some of his pals. One thing that's happened is the committee has basically compiled a list of people who are trying to get pardons from Donald Trump. You remember he was handing out pardons toward the end. Roger Stone got a pardon. Some other people got pardons. Pals of his got pardons. People who probably paid him off got pardons. And among those listed were Congress critters Matt Gaetz, Mo Brooks, Andy Biggs, Louie Gohmert, Scott Perry, and Marjorie Taylor Greene. They had all asked Trump for presidential pardons. And that's kind of telling because, as was pointed out in the hearing, you ask for a pardon if you're of the opinion you committed some crime and you'd like to not get hurt from it. And so you're pardoned even though you committed a crime. If you didn't commit a crime, what would you need a pardon for? So this is an interesting list, and all of these are various wacky people. And one of them, this Matt Gaetz character, he's the subject of a separate investigation involving alleged sex trafficking of women and underage girls. And according to former Trump senior advisor Eric Hirschman, Gaetz wanted a pardon, as he put it, for everything done from the dawn of time to the present day. Sounds like Gaetz has a lot of crimes he wants to hide here. And yeah, I think he wants to have his, I think he wants to have not just his attempts to help Trump stage a coup pardoned. I think he also wants his sex crimes pardoned. Probably got a bunch more that people, you know, haven't brought up to the courts yet. Oh, well, he didn't get it. Oh, boy. The revelations from that committee are just amazing. And it's hard to believe that people who have been educated in the law, and they're just this story is slopping over with lawyers. And it's full of people who have studied history. They had to have studied history in school. And all of these people are doing these things that are so illegal, so anti-American, and yet they're doing them. And we heard from more Republicans who just would not go along with Trump's attempt to steal the 2020 election. And, you know, on the other hand, some of these people said, yes, he did terrible things and I wouldn't go along with it. And I said, no, I won't do it. But if he runs in 2024, I'll vote for him. This is a little bit nuts. Hitler didn't need to commit suicide in that case. He could have said, I'll do a little bit of time and then I'll come back and run and they'll vote for me again. Well, they never voted for him before, but maybe they'd vote for him in West Germany or something. But, geez, I'm just amazed at that kind of mentality. Trump did treasonous things, illegal things, things that are obviously just plain bad and wrong. Oh, but if he runs to get in the same position where he could do that again, yeah, I'll vote for him. I can't wrap my head around that. Well, how do these people think about that kind of thing? And we heard about how hundreds of people at the Department of Justice were ready to resign if a hack lawyer named Jeffrey Clark had been named as the new attorney general. Trump was going to do that because he knew that this Jeffrey Clark guy would in fact issue a letter that Trump wanted to put out And he wanted this letter to be from the Department of Justice. And the letter would say that the Department of Justice had found that the 2020 election was rigged, and it was rigged against Trump. Trump told Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen that he wanted that letter signed by him. And then after Rosen, as Attorney General, had signed it, Trump said that he, Trump, and the Republican congressman were going to do the rest. So he wanted some kind of fig leaf to justify his big lie. And Rosen wouldn't provide it, and others wouldn't provide it. And it was starting to look like the Saturday night massacre of Watergate, where Richard M. Nixon wanted the special prosecutor fired because the special prosecutor was getting close to Nixon and what the hell had happened with Watergate. And Nixon wanted the guy fired. Well, he asked his attorney general to do it. And the attorney general said, geez, I can't do that. That'd be, you know, a big bad thing. So he fired him. And then the assistant was there, the next in command in the succession for attorney general was there. And he said, you do it. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. So he fired him, and he fired another one. And finally, they ended up not firing the special counsel anyway. So this is sort of similar to that, except it was far worse. Instead of stopping an investigation to wrongdoing that he'd done, he was trying to use an attorney general's signature on a letter that was full of lies to try and stage a coup and steal the election. Yeah, there was a steal involved, an attempted steal, and it was by Trump. So he was told, they told him in meetings, if you do that, I resign. And the next guy said that too. And a few people said that. And then they informed him there within, I think he said 24, 48, 72 hours, somewhere in there, you're going to have hundreds of people from the Department of Justice resigning over this. So you might want to rethink this idea. And with that, Trump rethought it and didn't do it. But it came that close. If Rosen had said, yeah, I'll do it, and had signed the letter, oh boy, that would have really propelled things forward. We don't know quite what would have happened, because Trump was asking the military about going in and seizing the voting machines in states that he thought he should have won, but he lost. And, you know, wow, that is a military coup right there. And Trump was trying to pull a coup off, and it would have been a military one, and the United States of America would have officially become a banana republic. Because that's what they do in those kinds of places. They have the military come in and deal with it. You have, you know, that's how Batista got into Cuba. That's how Gaddafi got to be in charge of Libya. Again and again and again, you see generals and colonels taking over countries in pretty much this same kind of way. And, of course, this idea that all he needed was that letter, and he and Republican congressmen would do the rest. Well, it's Republican Congress critters who are asking for pardons, so I guess they figured out how wrong it was. They didn't get their pardons. Some of those people, I think, may end up in prison. I really want to see Trump go to prison. He should be in prison. Some members of his family should be in prison with him. These hearings are showing just how perilously close the United States of America came to having democracy destroyed by a coup to keep Trump in power. And they were probably, the idea would be to keep Trump in power permanently. We would have had a king. You know, it would have been not too different from North Korea. but we really, really came close. And it's only because a succession of people said, no, this goes against what I believe, and I'm not going to do it. If any one of several different people had not had the scruples to say that, Trump would have gotten his way. And I don't know how far he would have gotten. I mean, what would have happened if he had kept going with this coup business? Would the military have stepped in to stop him? I don't know. Would somebody somehow have stopped him? Would somebody in Secret Service contingent decided to, you know, maybe put a 5-7 through Trump's temple in order to save America? That would have been a hero. And, you know, who knows what would have happened, but a whole bunch of people were attempted to be compromised to go along with Trump's plan in several different ways, and they all said no. And so that was a good thing. And again, some of these people said they'd vote for him again. I don't understand some of this. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. I think that the most poignant part of these hearings so far has been the live testimony of Shay Moss and her mother, Ruby Freeman. And these two women were both election workers in Georgia, and they were named by Trump as the architects of a big plot to count ballots for Biden that had never been cast. And this is this infamous thing of where Trump and his pals and Giuliani were saying, oh, they had a suitcase full of ballots that they took out from underneath a table, and then they ran them through, and all the ballots were for Biden, and they ran them through the machines over and over and over again to give Biden a victory in Georgia. And of course, none of that was true, and it's all been very explained. And there's video, surveillance video of what did happen, and you can see from what the people are talking about, yeah, that didn't happen. So Giuliani, you know, was trying to make stuff up like crazy, and he came up with this wild story about these two women and how they were the architects of giving Biden Georgia, how he knew that all of the ballots were for Biden. You know, that's in his fevered brain, which now and again leaks fluid. In any event, so they were accused of this, and they were publicly accused of this. And Trump named them, and they were these big coup plotters, according to Trump. And two women had their names, addresses, phone numbers, and photographs of their cars and license plates, as well as photographs of them, plastered all over right-wing social media sites. And they started getting harassed, of course, by the right-wing bad guys. And after a little bit, the FBI told them that they needed to go away, leave their homes for 2 months, because otherwise the FBI couldn't protect them. Jeez, you know, we have now the Supreme Court people getting lots of protection. They're not telling the Supreme Court creeps, hey, take a hike for 2 months. They're not telling some of these right-wing politicians, take a hike for 2 months. They're giving them protection. These two black women who were poll workers, who are not high-profile, high-paid people, they're not connected. They just work. They do a job of, you know, shuffling the ballots around and filling out forms and feeding them into the machines and stuff like that. And they are told, oh, we can't protect you. Why don't you go away for 2 months? Wow, another wrong thing going on here. And at least one right-wing MAGA fool forced his way into Miss Maus's grandmother's house, and he was looking to make a citizen's arrest of the two poll workers. Again, this is because of all the stupid propaganda put out by Giuliani and Team Giuliani, as they called it, as opposed to Team Normal, which was the other bunch that were supposed to be working on this stuff. And Trump supporters camped outside the homes of these two women, and they made death threats against them. And, of course, quite a bit of what they said was rough and racist, to be expected from the white supremacists who support Trump. And all of this stems from the big lie that Trump was putting out in an effort to stay in power. And then, of course, we remember that Giuliani and that idiot Powell person were making amazingly stupid allegations all over the place. And again, they kept showing these two women and saying they were really doing the bad stuff. And wow, I mean, I think Trump needs to go to prison for that alone.
Yes.
If you use your federal power to attack a citizen, that is like the lowest thing possible. It's not like he was going after a senator or, you know, somebody else who's in a powerful position and connected. These are just two people. These are clerks. These are clerical workers who happen to work at a polling place. And they don't have all these connections. They're not wealthy. And so he's attacking them with all the power of the presidency of the United States and everything he could delegate to fools like Giuliani and Powell and the others. He needs to go to prison for that alone. He needs to go to prison for treason. But for this alone also, he needs to go to prison. And the Trump supporters aren't done doing bad things yet. In this past couple of weeks, in Otero County, New Mexico, County Commissioner Cooey Griffin, who was recently sentenced to 14 days in jail for participating in the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol, refused a state Supreme Court order to certify his state's June 7th primary results. When reporters reached him by phone, this Griffin guy said, quote, "My vote to remain a no isn't based on any evidence. It's not based on any facts. It's only based on my gut feeling and my own intuition, and that's all I need," unquote. So they were refusing to certify the votes again in a Republican primary. And his guy, I guess, didn't do well enough, so he was getting them to not certify them. And somebody got a court order saying, you got to certify this stuff. And he still refused. I think he needs to be held in contempt of court and go away for a while. This is our annual Christopher Street Liberation Day program. Yes, it's LGBT plus infinity pride month, and the march is tomorrow, Sunday, since you're listening to this on Saturday and we're recording it on Friday. Sunday is the big march. And so, yes, we do this every year. We talk about this. That's why we give you the cold opening of Freaking Fag Revolutionary Radio. And as I said on the last program, I'm not going to go to this march. It's you know, I'm still concerned about getting COVID-19. Can happen. There are people dying every day of it. And if you don't die, you might get long COVID. I don't need that. I don't need my lungs to be any more damaged than they are. And also, I am probably not physically up to it. Waiting around for hours and then marching for some miles. I'm just a wreck right now, and I've got to build up to next year doing that. I mean, I haven't had a lot of exercise in the past 27 months. So I hope to do it next year. And I had missed only one march before the pandemic hit. Ironically, that was exactly 50 years ago on the date you're hearing this program. Yes, June 25th, 1972 was a march. It was the third Christopher Street Liberation Day march. And yes, I call it by the original name because that's what it's about. The Stonewall riots were riots. It wasn't, oh, a rebellion, it, you know, sugarcoating it and all of that. No, there were riots. People were fighting. People were fighting the police, the tactical patrol force, and stuff happened. And so I always call it Christopher Street Liberation Day March. And so June 25th, 1972, I did miss one. And various things were happening in my life. A whole lot of stuff was going on. Some of it I can't even remember because shortly before the march, like a couple of months before the march, I stopped writing stuff down in my journal. And yeah, so I was going through a few things in 1972. And one of the things was I didn't go to the march that year. I'd actually considered it to be not as important as other things I was doing with the Gay Activist Alliance. So I didn't go. Wish I'd gone, didn't go. That's life. I have to say again that I think it's wrong of Heritage of Pride to ban the Gay Officers Action League from the march. Really, we can't go around just excluding other people because we don't like their politics. They start with the gay cops, and I guess then they'll go to the gay commies at some point, unless they are the gay commies, which is possible, and various people banning other people. This is bad for the movement because the march is an important thing. And I used to be one of the people who ran it from November of 79 to May of 84. The march is an important thing, and we shouldn't be banning people from it. Speaking of banning, a library on Long Island went and voted, the board of the library voted to ban all pride displays in the children's area of the library out there. And, oh boy, people said, you're going to do what? And this was really quite a thing. Well, in about 24 hours or so, there was so much negative pushback on that that the board met again and voted to rescind what it had done and leave all the pride displays up there and all of this. And the library people, the National Library groups, they started saying, you can't do this. The idea of a library is to make things available to people, not to hide things or keep things from people. And that's true. Libraries are an important thing. It might sound somewhat stereotypical. Libraries are an important thing for gay kids. When I was a gay kid, the library was important to me. I used to hang out there a whole lot. I used to go to the library just about every day. I went to the main branch of the Brooklyn Public Library at Grand Army Plaza. One of the things I do is I started looking things up. There was a reader's guide to periodical literature. There were other things, and I could look at subjects in the card files, and here I am looking at this, and, homosexuality, huh? Yeah, what is that? And, you know, looking up the cards, and basically I found a book. Again, this is a very long time ago. I was just a kid, a young kid, and I was 11 or 12, and I found this book called The Homosexual in America, A Subjective Approach. It was written by a guy who called himself Donald Webster Corey. Turns out his real name was Edward Segarin, and he had written this book. He was a pretty closeted gay man, and he wrote this book about stuff. He wrote a sequel to it, too, which I was eventually able to dig out of the library. And the book was published in 1951. So you figure a guy who's a closet case in 1951, the atmosphere is one of there are the McCarthy stuff is going on and all this repression. And oh, boy, that's really tough. And if you're a closet case, which he was, which most people had to be in those days, if you're a closet case, you're really going to have an attitude that's, you know, not something that these days we'd say would be right on, so to speak. Anyway, so I was able to find this book, The Homosexual in America, in the main branch of the Brooklyn Public Library. And, of course, they have just, I don't know how many tens of thousands or maybe hundreds of thousands of books. And this was on the shelves. And so I would go over there. I knew where it was. I saw where it was. I could figure out the Dewey Decimal System. And so I went to this one little shelf in sort of a corner. And I took this book. And I think I had another book, too, to hide it. And I didn't want people to know. And I went over to a table where there weren't people, and I opened it up, and I started reading about it. And that's where I started getting an education about being gay. That's where I found out gay was a word that was used for homosexuals. And so I understand how important a library can be to a gay kid, because you know, this was a very important thing to me. It told me I wasn't the only one. Now, it also said some other things. You know, one of the things it said was, oh, and it was not exactly complimentary to gay people. Homosexuals can't really love anybody. They just have sex and then throw each other away. And they said, oh, and some of them will just go for teenagers. How perverted to just want to have sex with high school boys. I'm reading this. I'm 11 or 12. I'm not in high school. I think high school kids are old. And so I said, how big a pervert am I? What I want is the other kid in my class in school who's also 11 or 12. So there was also that part of it that got me a little bit, oh, God, what the hell's with me? I'm not the only one, but I guess I'm like the worst one? What the hell's going on here? Anyway, it's very important that kids be able to find out about these things. One of the things that we had a statistic for years ago was approximately 50% of the kid suicides were over the kid figuring they're homosexual. And statistically, you look at it, and 50% of the population is not homosexual. This means that a disproportionate number of straight kids are committing suicide because they think they're homosexual, but it turns out they're not. They just don't know what the hell's going on. But being homosexual has such a stigma attached to it still for some people that the kid will kill him or herself. And this is still going on. And being able to go to a library and read a book can help you a great deal. So, yeah, keep the libraries open. And we have a tradition. And here we go.
Some remain, all these places have things that went before. I know I'll often stop and think about them. In my life, I love you more.
And the Supreme Court has just been doing stupid stuff this past week. The other day, the Supreme Court ruled that the Sullivan Law, which has been on the books in New York since 1911, and says that if you want to get a concealed carry permit for a firearm, you have to show that there's a real need for you to have a concealed carry permit. You need to be able to carry the gun. And the state gets to decide, yeah or no. So the Supreme Court said, nope, that's unconstitutional. The Second Amendment says you can't do that. You know, the word regulated is in that amendment. So what the hell? You can't have the regulations? They allow very little regulation. And so this is a stupid, terrible ruling. And now people are going to get permits, not because they need it and they can prove a real need to have it. People are going to get permits to carry concealed guns on the basis of, I want to. So the right-wingers in the Supreme Court say that people who want a permit to carry a concealed gun should be able to get one on that basis of, I want it, and not on the basis of the government deciding that they really need one. And this is the opposite of what they're doing with regard to Roe, which we're going to get to in a second. And this is all dangerous stuff, with a lot more people walking around with concealed guns on them. They're going to shoot each other. Stupid arguments that might have ended up, you know, in harsh words are going to end up in fatalities. People won't guess what they might do until it happens. Really, you don't. Carrying a gun with you is quite a responsibility. If you have the ability to twitch your finger and kill somebody, that's a big deal. I know about that. I carried a gun in a war zone. I know about that. And people will not get this. They'll say, oh, some people will get it because, hey, look, they'll show all their friends they got a gun. Some people will get it for a macho trip. All sorts of reasons to have one because I want it that are crappy reasons. And this is going to be very, very bad. And the people themselves aren't going to know what's going to happen. Some of those people are going to end up in prison or dead because of this. And if they didn't have a gun, they wouldn't end up in prison or dead. But they're going to get guns in the next several months, I suppose. And they're going to do something stupid. They'll lose impulse control, or they'll feel bad and eat the gun, or something like that. And of course, they'll leave it around for their kids to find and kill themselves. So this is a very bad idea. Not everyone can handle walking around with a gun. And, you know, is New York City going to become the wild, wild west? They say they're going to try and make restrictions like you can't have it on the subway. Yeah, that's going to work out. And there's also this. Criminals are probably thrilled with this because it's something new to mug somebody over. What happens is now somebody comes over and mugs you. He steals your wallet and your smartphone. Well, in a few months, they'll steal your wallet, your smartphone, and your gun. Now, there are more guns in the hands of criminals. And, oh boy. So this is going to put a lot of guns in the hands of criminals in New York City. Supreme Court doesn't seem to give a rat's zinger.
And June 24th was a terrible, awful day. We are all one step closer to having this country run by a theocracy, because when a minority of people, a lot of them religious zealots, get to influence the Supreme Court and have them take away a woman's right to reproductive choice, this is us being on our way to a theocracy. It's so upsetting, I can barely speak about it. And it's something that's never happened before in the history of the United States. And it's a gigantic step backwards. Here we are in the 21st century. Some things have been bad in the world. There have been some really good things in the world. One of the good things was a woman's right to choose. And that's gone now. That is not the law of the land anymore. And it's not just the thin end of the wedge. This is a big hammer that's bludgeoning first this right. And they're going to go after other rights, too. They're going to go after same-gender marriage, gay rights, contraception. I mean, we know this. We know this because the people who did this, the justices who did this, are a bunch of liars. They lied to get confirmed, and they're lying now when they say, oh no, we're just going to do this one little thing.
Except for Clarence Thomas, yes, who says, yeah, we're going to roll up all the rest of these things. So,
well, yes, I mean, they probably would rather he hadn't done that. It's a terrible, awful day, and there are some states where the state government will stand steady to make sure that women still have a choice, still have access to the things they need to have access to. Even though we knew this was coming, it's still, to have it happen is just so awful. But don't give up hope. There is still hope that things can get better. Although right now it's hard to see that very much.
And we have to find ways of fighting this.
Yes.
And also fighting any attempts to go along with Clarence Thomas's agenda. Oh boy. That's been Back in a Book for this week. We are preempted next week, so we'll be back here in 2 weeks. July 9th will be our next radio program. Coming up next is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
Thanks a hell of a lot for listening. The weather's nice. If you can, go out and march. The weather will be good to look at, and it's going to be sunny at least sometimes, so enjoy that. And above all, remember what that getting ready for new fights on a political level Dormouse said.
This week on WBAI Playhouse, The Originalist by John Strand. It portrays Justice Antonin Scalia, his public face, opinions, the private man, and his new law clerk.
Your thinking is flawed, your reasoning weak, your tone confrontational.
Sir, I want to...
And you have a very bad habit of interrupting.
Yes, sir, I'm...
You start a month from tomorrow.
Start the job?
Law clerk and sparring partner. Are you a fighter?
Sir, yes. Yes, I am.
Well, you will keep me in shape by advancing your untenable arguments, which I will systematically destroy.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Even if we can't cure you over the next 12 months, maybe we can upgrade your status.
Sir?
To recovering liberal.
That's The Originalist by John Strand, Saturday evening, 8 p.m., on listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
Hey, want to make a difference? Join the WBAI Outreach and Fundraising Task Forces on Wednesday, June 29th at 7 p.m. to make WBAI fiscally strong again. By phone, use any Zoom number like 646-558-8656. That's 646-558-8656. The meeting ID is 922-457-2995 or WBAILSB995. That's 922-457-2995. The passcode is like our frequency. The passcode is 995-995-99. That's Wednesday, June 29th, 7 p.m. To join by web or for more details, visit the meeting section of WBAI.org. Again, Wednesday, June 29th, 7 p.m.
Greetings, Tri-State. Imhotep, Gary Burke, Radio GBE Mind Flight on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. Pass the word and join us every Sunday afternoon, 1 to 3 p.m., right after church and after our early Wake Up Everybody show down the dial. It's culture, consciousness, community, and the special blend of infotainment and edutainment you've come to expect from Radio GBE. Sunday, 1 to 3 p.m., right here on 99.5 FM, WBAI.
Join WBAI's Freedom Class on Saturday, June 25th. We are inviting all young people and curious adults to learn more about our government. Learn how your Constitution works. Taught by Gloria J. Brown Marshall, host of Law of the Land and other experts. Freedom Class will be online and simulcast on WBAI. Be part of Freedom Class on June 25th, Saturday at 1 p.m. Freedom Class information is on the WBAI website, WBAI.org. Registration for online participation via Zoom is limited, but you can listen to our Freedom Class broadcast Saturday, June 25th at 1 p.m. Come ready to be empowered, inspired, and informed by WBAI's Freedom Class, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI.